Want to be Victoria Beckham. Hello, welcome to the Other Swan Gamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to the Age of Sigmar Stat Center with my co-host, Mr. Owen the Jackson. Hello, Owen. How are you?
I'm very well, Rob. Yes, it's Monday. We're here to talk about Warhammer. We're going to make some perfectly accurate and not biased views on Warhammer available to the internet. And I wouldn't change my Monday for anything. Long live the lockdown.
Long live the Monday show. No, I agree. Very, very excited to talk about this today. It's my fave, and big love to you for being here. And thank you to everyone for joining us live. Big love to Wap Wap. Says, Owen, I love you. Borny, sorry again. Cass, I hope you're well. Nikos, Rob Kelly, Darker Design, what's going on? Oripa, holy tie-dyed reusable diapers. It's the amazing Owen Jackson. I agree. The orange juice that we all need on a Monday. That's what I say. So, Owen, big weekend. Now, the Age of Sigmar Stats Center obviously is meant to do tournament results and information. However, you guys probably know about the global pandemic at this stage. Probably. If you haven't heard, then I would say go outside and hear the news, but don't. Stay inside and hear
the news. It's all shit. Don't do it. Be like those Vietnamese warriors or Japanese warriors on an island, you know, thinking that World War II is still going on for like 30 years or something. Just don't.
I picture there's some guy still inside a club being like, when will everyone turn up? Like,
yeah, I really want to lick someone's face, and this is really pissing me off.
So, unfortunately, there haven't been many events, but there have still been some, and there is still some stuff for us to unpack, which is fun. This show will get better and better as more events occur, not long down the line. However, still loads of stuff for us to talk about today, which is very exciting. Before we get into all of that, though, Owen, how have you been? You been well?
I've been all right, yeah. I've just noticed in the chat, though, some really sad news, Rob. I'm sorry. I know we're all hype and excitable. But, yeah, that morning, Rob, some sad news from Sheffield. The ancestral home of the Sheffield Slaughter, the Davy McGee Social Club, is closing for good in March. The Dragon Slayers will need a new home for the Slaughter. Sad as it's been the home of the oldest Warhammer Fantasy Battles tournament for 22 years.
That is some sad news. We have been to the Davy several times to do coverage for the Honest War Game in TSN, and we played there. It's a quaint look at what unions and mining towns are like. A great time, great butties, actually really great place, lovely place.
I loved it. It was steeped in history, and I think it was actually a year ago yesterday that Slaughter was on, Rob, that we were up there, you and Benjamin and I, doing the coverage with intern Matt, obviously.
Nathan, that was a great time.
Of course. God, it was fun. Yeah.
I'm excited for them to find a new home, though, for the Sheffield Slaughter. That'll be super fun. The guys that run the Slaughter are brilliant people, and I can't wait for them to find a new venue. And long may it go. Also, we might be able to just buy the Davy for, I don't know, if anyone's got like £45 and a packet of crisps, probably be able to purchase it, to be honest. We could turn that into, listen to this, Owen. Warhammer event space through the weekend, through the week. We just play Northern Soul Classics and dance on our own. That's what I'm thinking.
Just the talcum powder for days, right? Just like, yeah, just that would be amazing. that's sad. I do like those. I do like those old like working men's club venues and stuff.
Bathroom facilities I'm being asked about were fantastic. Point to note. Yeah, important. Great. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, sad news, but long may it continue. Long may it go on. Right. That would be good.
Yes. I'm sure that with the guys, because I believe that the organisers, they've kind of AD and Pete have handed the organisation on to the next generation. So maybe they'll have a next generation venue to go with. But good times. But no, so sorry to derail you slightly there, Rob. But on the whole, I'm pretty good, man. Yeah, been thinking about Warhammer, playing a couple of games. Might put some paint on a model this week. So can't complain, really. Yourself, how are you, sir? You good?
I'm good, thank you very much. I mean, busy weekend, did the coverage. Then we did some really fun WTC pairing stuff. last night, which was super fun. And if you guys didn't happen to tune into our special Sunday show, which I think is going to be regular every Sunday for the next 6 weeks, you guys should go back and watch it. Really, really fun. We had Neil and Tom on discussing some 8-man team events that were happening on TTS and what that pairing information looked like. First defenders, second defenders, attackers. I thought that was really, really interesting stuff. Fascinating to see this play out, obviously in Age of Sigmar as well. I've still got the Philip Kartiev sent me some stuff over from his team event, his that they had over in Russia, so that's still something I'm going to break down. And then there's also stuff coming from Butchers and some other events coming up. So seeing those pairings information is, I find, fascinating. First defenders, second defenders, because Owen, that's something you guys are going through in the Butchers Tribe event at the moment, right?
Yes, it is, and I won't lie, like that. There seems to be some like sweet science to all that. Like, I kind of know what my army does, and I know what other armies do, and blah blah blah. But in terms of the ordering and the first defender, and you know, the way in which you can effectively win that pairings process, that's kind of a little bit. Whew, there are people, such as like Laurie and Leo, and then when I play for Wales, then Simon Weekly, who comes from a 40k background, they're very much more into that whole analytical way of, you know, they can basically see the outcomes if they, you know, let's bust this guy, and that'll hopefully give us these matchups. And there's some real, it's very much the game within the game, isn't it, Rob?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think it also makes for interesting list writing and also interesting games and results. I think Team Warhammer probably the future of us doing events generally anyway. So looking forward to more of that as time goes on. Owen, I'm going to have to quickly ask you. I know we're not pushed for time, but I just want to make sure I ask you. How did you feel about the reveals at the weekend? I want to get your take on it.
I'm really happy for Luminette Realm Lords players. Sorry, go on, Rob.
No. I've just realized this is still going to the WTC Facebook page. Apologies, WTC guys.
Come over and play some Age of Sigmar.
Play some Age of Sigmar as well. It's pretty good, but I'll stop that now. Apologies. You carry on.
So Luminette Realm Lords. I was kind of tempted initially, but I'm not going to do the army, but wow. I mean, if you're in and you can sort of afford to, you know, pick up a decent amount of the range, then wow, they've got, I'd imagine there's going to be multiple ways to play that. Good for them, but not really floating my boat. I did like, what's his name? Is it Gardas? The sort of, with his kind of Superman pose. I've been looking at putting a Lord Celestine on a Star Drake in some Cities of Sigmar lists. So I quite like that he looks good. He would look good on top of a different mount, a different dragon or Star Drake. So yeah, I thought that was a cool release, and people seem to be super happy to have that, you know, that Black Library character brought to life. Outside of that, I don't have a destruction army, and I really like the look of the, what are they called, the Headwrecker Mad Mob. I do like those Bone Splitter models. They look pretty cool. The big news really, Cursed City. I'm kind of thinking I might do the whole thing of like get it, and then on the day it comes, like build it all and just try and like paint it all in a week, like a challenge kind of thing. I'm pretty damn hype for that whole.
Oh, that. Nice! I like that. That's a good idea. Yeah, I was like, that's a lot to try and paint up, you know, over the course of like before you play. That's a lot to do before you play. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I've still got the Blackstone Fortress where I painted a few of the characters, but everything else is just basically Zenithal, so all the bad guys are living in a monochrome world, and then all of the heroes are in full color. I think you could probably get away with, like, I like the idea of like a Sin City style scheme that matches the promo art, so, you know, red, white and black. That would probably work quite nicely for those. Yeah. And yeah, as Gabawaki says in the chat, contrast. Yeah, I do see people on the internet a lot now just going, God bless contrast. So, fair play to those boys for, you know, giving
keeping,
us something.
Keeping that alive.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The White King, that's the only other one. I really liked it, don't get me wrong. And I think it's very referential in terms of, you know, the current, the existing death rattle sort of skeleton range. when you see how bonkers they've gone with the Lumineth stuff, maybe they could have pushed it a little bit more. But I don't know. I think a lot of people seem to be really happy. So, yeah, great. I mean, it was a pretty... They spunked their load on Saturday, didn't they?
They did. There was no fucking about. They gave us they gave us the whole lot.
So, yeah, that was fun. So that was, yeah, that made Saturday quite a fun day, didn't it? We had, you know, coverage, and then we had the... It was like... We covered quite a few, or you covered quite a few different elements of the hobby on Saturday with the gaming coverage, and then all the reveals.
It was fun weekend. Thanks to Warp Spider for subscribing. Thanks to everyone for joining us. Studio Ocean, I don't really have any opinions about the Lumineth reveal. Not true. And actually, I think Benjamin put a really good series of tweets out identifying the book. I talked about this yesterday with Dayton, the book and how it is. And again, just quick point, all rules should be free. We should be paying for narrative and like creative exploitation, like as opposed to just like some chonky rules. And if you work hard enough, all the rules are free. So that's nice. I'm most excited for Bellicor. The thing I'm always excited about, Owen, when I see these reveals, miniatures aside, I love the miniatures and I like the narrative in the background as well. Super important to me. I do always love the concept of new armies, though, new play styles, how they're going to play, what those matchups are going to look like at competitive events. I think that's always interesting. Is there something that's going to change the meta? Is there some new design space that they're going to work into rules? And it's exciting to see that like there were some nods to new armies, Kanothi, cities, sort of Sisters of Sigmar, like something like that, vampires, werewolves. Really keen. And, you know, if those armies look nice on the tabletop, that's great. New models are always great, but there's, people like me are going to paint them, so they're only ever going to look okay.
There's a lot of people in the chat talking about the B-bomb, the Bellicor. There's some chat, actually, because his pose looks very similar to his existing pose, but there's some theories going around, maybe a full new Demon Prince kit with a Bellicor sort of build as an option.
I think that's very, very likely, personally. I think Demon Prince kit super old. Also nice to see some new Demon Prince rules. Arguably, Demon Princes are in a weird place, like a lot of characters in Age of Sigmar. You know, like you've got like the Light of Altharion and Sigvald. I guess they're comparable. You know, for these kind of like melee central pieces, and I doubt either of them will really see much play over the course of the game. Like. And then you've got Demon Princes, which are way, way worse. way worse. So it's it'd be interesting to see where they, if like in Age of Sigmar 3, but also in the future, if they can start to take some of these melee-orientated pieces, and they're not just some sort of support piece with a command ability. They've got some sort of like, you know, fight all comers role. I'm not expecting them all to be Gotrek, of course, but it would be interesting to see them pointed and useful as like, you know, little individual missiles. Like, oh crap, that Demon Prince is coming over. He's definitely gonna fight my 20 whatevers.
Still not as good as two sharks though, probably, eh?
Probably not as good as two sharks, let's be honest.
16 wounds, 4-up save, doesn't have a profile that degrades, flies 14, operates.
Shoots eight shots.
Yeah.
Has six melee attacks, rend 2, damage 2. Really good.
Possibly 8 melee attacks, rend 2, damage 2 if it goes into something that it's just shot. So a nice bit of synergy on the. Anyway, that means we can probably talk about Hammer Time because we saw some sharks ripping it up on Saturday, didn't we?
Let's do it. Let's talk about Hammer Time. So if you guys didn't tune in or aren't aware, Hammer Time 7 was an 82 person TTS event organized by the gorgeous Mr. Owen Jackson, and the top 8 people that competed in that event on that 3-round event went through into a elimination event. Owen, I'm going to just ask you for some back behind the scenes stuff. How did you feel about, this is the first time you've gone through that process, all of this into a top 8. I know Benjamin's in the chat. Benjamin sent me a message and he was just like, I think this is the future. I love this shit. How do you feel about it? Like, do you feel like that taking those people away and doing a top 8 was a really fun thing?
Yeah, definitely. And I have had some nice feedback from people saying there was a lot of hype on the day. And I think the knockout element made each game like super critical. But yeah, it worked out really well because we had 82 players for the sort of qualifier, as it were, and only 8 players went 3-0. And then it was an opportunity, you know, for them to really test their mettle. So Yeah, it was, and I'll be honest with you, from a TO point of view, it was a really nice day. It's like having going from dealing with 80 players to 8 players. There was like probably one question, no rules interactions, or no issues per se. But yeah, there seemed to be like the players were like super hyped and like taking it really seriously. And then I think from the feedback I've had from people that watched or followed along, it was like, you know, felt like a proper, you know, an exciting event. It was something where people were invested in seeing the route to victory for the eventual winner. And, you know, you had folk heroes like Orcman, and then you had your sort of pantomime villains in anybody who brought Seraphon. So there was real it created good stories, and I think people enjoyed the day. What was your impression?
So the TTS environment is always going to be an interesting conversation, in a bunch of different ways. And I guess when it relates to coverage and also the excitement factor, it's hard for me sometimes just inside this little room to be like thrilled. You know, when you go to an event and there's that energy, sometimes you can be as excited, but it's weird. It's a digital place where you're all going and you're connecting with people digitally. And then I don't know, but that said, I really, really enjoyed it. Like I did, I honestly really did. And it would have been nice. What's weird is it's harder to take in those four tables digitally and then show it to the world than it is to do it in the physical landscape world, like real world stuff. So like there were some problems for me there, and I would like in the future to be able to jump between the multi tables, but there's something. So I felt a bit disjointed because I was only watching one game and hearing what was happening on the others, and I would have liked to have gone through, because we absolutely could do that here. Like, if we had, or at any event, if I have a top 8 at any event now, I can cover 4 tables in quality really well, which is great. Mm. So you can kind of take those stories. So then it would have felt like every story and thread that led up into the semifinals and the finals. Like, and then you ask me how I feel about it then, absolutely wild. The energy, like, I'd have been, like, game 3, I'd have just been buzzing, throbbing. And, like, I'd have all this, and me and the viewers, and like, you know, the casting crew and the viewers, we would have had this like day of story, and it would have been epic. So I'd like to try that. If you do a top 8 thing again in the future, I would like to try and create that and put that out and see how that works. But I know that it's always going to work better in a physical space. So how do I feel about top 8? I think it's cool. And I feel like in the real world, it's going to be very, very, very cool. And that's not to detract from the TTS stuff, but I hope I'm making myself clear. I still think it's just as valid, obviously. I feel that there's, I can't connect with the whole thing. Am I making sense?
You are making sense. Yeah. And also there's a bit of truncation in the sense that, you know, it's not like we went from a qualifying tournament straight into this. There's been a gap of 2 weeks. So that overall tournament experience you get when you're playing in real life, and you're like going from the Saturday to the Sunday, and you've got the Saturday night to like process all the lists and you know, go through those stories and find out those fun things that happened. You know, it's a bit more difficult. I have been thinking about how to potentially implement it in real life. I think with enough notice in advance, you could potentially do it whereby maybe you run a tournament over a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think it's much easier for people to perhaps take Fridays off. Or maybe it could be on a... If you timed it with a bank holiday Monday, you could do a 2-day tournament, and then on the bank holiday Monday, that's when you have your top 8. And if you've bought a ticket for the tournament, then you can stay as a viewer, then as an observer. I can't think of the correct word, but you know what I mean. You could be in the audience then to watch the top 8 go through. I think that potentially.
I think you would just do a singles event. Like, I think what you do is you just do Friday, Saturdays the games, and then you make it 6 games, like, mm-hmm. so that it's just the whole thing, and then top 8 on the Saturday go through, and then you just everyone in the singles can either play in a singles event. Yeah, for some like comedy top prizes or something, mm-hmm. super fun. Yeah, like it's like a big singles event, or you that's what I would do. Or you can watch. So those are your two options. Do you want to watch all the matches? Sweet. If you don't, and you want to play, all good. I think that would be a great vibe, and I think that's something that we should do in the future, definitely. Like regardless of everything else, I think that definitely works and would be fun. And also 3 days of coverage, that's great. Means I don't have to take the equipment up and down. It, like, like in 2 days. I could do it in 3 days. Love that, Owen. I'm all about that. I think people would.
Yeah, you've got to think about those practical considerations. I also like the idea of maybe doing it. I'd love to go to, I know it sounds a bit silly, but I'd love to go to a tournament where it's like a stately home or something, bonkers. And then you've got a huge room to do the tournament in. And then you've got some other little bars and places to eat. And then everyone just camps in the grounds of the stately home for the whole tournament, like a festival or something. I think that would be pretty.
Expect the Magic Mushroom Super Party tournament that me and Owen are going to be throwing in the future.
You're only allowed to bring gits, and you've got to like narrative the shit out of it and just be like wild off your brain on cider or mushrooms all weekend or both.
But what's cool about it is, and it's what like I hope the Super Series was a point of as well, is you didn't get lost in the milieu with the top eight. We knew that there were eight players. We knew seven were order. We knew Orkman was our destruction hero. Like, so we had that story. We knew the Seraphon were there. We knew what was going on. So as we saw these stories, like even Svend with his Ardeneth with the sharks, we kind of were on board with that. We were like, this is cool. Let's go with all the sharks. So, you know, you could support your kind of like smaller, like, you weren't invested in like this whole tournament. It was just like these small, and you picked your team, right? You're like, I'm invested in this. We all were sad when Orkman went down in the round. And then it was an unsurprising finish, ultimately. I mean,
yes. Yeah. I mean, for anybody that didn't have the opportunity to catch the coverage, we ended up with a Seraphon Fangs of Sotek list duking it out against the Lumineth Realm Lord Sire. So I actually think that, you know, some people don't like TTS, and that's perfectly fine because the hobby's a really broad church. But, you know, I think if you, in a world of the same release schedule, if you'd have had physical real tournaments, it wouldn't be a surprise to see a Seraphon army facing off against the Lumineth Realm Lord's army for the title, would it, if we were doing coverage IRL, you know what I mean? No. So I think it was good to see those, because I do think, despite the Lumineth not having as high a win percentage as we looked at in the stats last week, I do think they're right up in there in that top bracket. So yeah, it was really interesting to see, like, it's like when you see your two heavyweights sort of slugging it out for the world heavyweight title. You want to see the two top armies, and they were both good players who knew what they were doing. I think Matthew wouldn't mind me saying that I think he made a couple of mistakes on deployment and allowing the salamanders in through the back door, as it were, was, you know, that was a bit of a mistake. But to see the power of the Seraphon army and the options they've got, like, I don't want to just be somebody that comes on the internet and moans about the really strong stuff, because something has to be good and you want things to be good, but really seeing how that army plays and all the options was really interesting. Right, I think it blew Adam doing the coverage, had his mind blown a little bit into the potential.
Didn't Adam do well? Let's compliment Adam. Yeah. Both Adam and James come and did the commentary with me, and Adam's done really well. Like, Adam's going to become one of these people who I regularly ask to come and do commentary with me if he wants to, because I think he did a great job, and I love seeing that level of enthusiasm and effort, and he did a great job. So it's great. And also kept his regular personality in check, which is key, super key, because... he said in the chat, Seraphon can fuck off. He didn't say that on air, which is...
yeah, man. I'd like to find out, because if he's a Gemini or not, because he's definitely got that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde vibe going on. We all... Yeah.
So Pete says in the chat, Lumineth don't have the bodies to properly screen. Nothing in their army can really be considered chaff, which is one of the drawbacks of the faction. Agreed. I think that's one of the things that you're going to see when we're doing the review tonight, Monday night. Obviously, we're doing the Sinesh review tonight. It's going to be one of the conversations about that as well. Even Demonettes, like, as chaff at 100 points, are, like... we did talk about this. We do think Matt maybe could have screened at the back with the sharks and maybe kept his sentinels alive a little bit longer. I feel like there were some misplays on the Lumineth front. But ultimately, I think Seraphon are just so dominant because they just are so much cheaper than everyone else, and they've got so many options and abilities on how they play over the top of everyone else. One of the shows I'm going to do this week at some point is going to be a criticism of myself, which is one of my favorite things to do. Talked a lot about the win rates. Obviously, as we get more and more stats, when events do eventually come back, we're going to talk about that 40 to 60% bracket. Talked about that a lot when me and LLV would do the stats, and that's mainly because we were cutting Games Workshop some slack. Because we were like, look, there's stuff out there with like a 75% win rate when Daughters of Cain were there. You know, if we could bring that down 15%, we'll just let everyone be in this 40 to 60 bracket. That's a little bit better. But ultimately, I kind of shoehorned myself there, and Owen has done the Fat Middle event and some other stuff. Really, 60% isn't okay. Because then we kind of like, when something's 62 or 64%, you're like, that's all right. And really, it's not. 45 to 55 really should be the bracket that we're looking at for a tighter and better game. And Seraphon are way above those numbers. Way, way above those numbers. They're already, obviously, the best performing army that we've seen in the percentages anyway, in the stats. And their numbers are pretty significant. Owen, you did some numbers. Will we get into that later?
I think what I'd like to do, I don't want to just throw, because they are some pretty bonkers numbers. People have been requesting some more granularity to the way that I've put those numbers together. So in terms of, you know, win percentage versus other versus things other than Seraphon. So, you know, taking the mirror matches out. But yeah, I mean, what was it? Dracothian's Tale, which you don't see very often, even including mirror matches, has a 79.5% win rate out of before the weekend, which is pretty bonkers. But I did. Have you got the? I did bring. I've got Trogdor's list, which pretty much is like the Fangs of Sotek list, or a version of.
It's on the screen now. Just to say that one of the things that I liked about this event as well, Owen, was the multinational nature of the top eight, right? You had people from all over. It was taken out by a British fella, but we had people from we had them from all over, right?
Yeah, we had two Brits actually, two players from the UK were the ones duking out in the final. But saying that, Trogdor, who is Jake, I found it, his real name is Jake. Jake was based in Malaysia. So we had somebody, you had a UK player based in Malaysia. We had Marcus, obviously, on the stream, who's an Italian living in France. We had an Argentinian player who's based in Spain at the moment. And then we had a Canadian. We had Orkmans from Hungary, but I believe he lives in Germany. I know he's from Hungary anyway. And then Svend is a Danish guy. So, yeah, we had players from all over, which is obviously something, unless everyone gets on lots of planes, it's not really something that can happen in real life. So yeah, that I did want to put the little flags up when I was sort of doing my graphic showing the sort of the chart for the day, and it was amazing. I think we had eight players and seven different nationalities, so yeah, super cool.
Okay, I think that was a nice part here. So yeah, Trogdor took the event out, and obviously you can go back and watch this stream against Lumineth Realm Lords as well. And this is pretty much like a strong cookie cutter vibe for Seraphon, right?
Yeah. There's the power base of Croak, the Astrolith Bearer, the Star Priest, and the Skink Priest. Some people put redundancy in by adding in, they double up on the Skink Priests or double up on the Star Priests, but fundamentally that's your hero loadout if you're playing most things. Certainly all the Starborn Seraphon builds have that. If you go down a coalesced route, then perhaps you would have a Scarvet on a Carnosaur or something of that nature. But yeah, definitely this is your Starborn hero loadout, so that's your power base. And you saw at the weekend, Croak really didn't do too much in the final, did he?
I mean the thing he did, I feel, was most important was he generated those command points, which was quite important. Oftentimes Trogdor turns 2 and 3, Trogdor had 5 CP that he had available to him for a variety of different things, which I think was important. It wasn't until turn 2, maybe turn 3, that Matt actually cast a spell that makes all of the command abilities cost 2. But Croak did do something massive. Back of the board, this is, I think, the most important part. Back of the board, Teclis, ability to pick 4 spells and cast them at a casting value of 10. Matt decided, and there was a bunch of really positive spells he could have cast. Matt decided only to cast 1 at Unbindable, which was Protection of Teclis. And that's because of board-wide Unbind with pluses to Unbind available to Croak. So I would actually say that that's one of the things that he did do, is he shut down, or he made the risk management for the Lumineth Realm Lords they had to make a risky call. He had to be like, am I going to try and cast these four spells, or is protection of Teclis important? And actually, Matt, I think, made probably the right call. Protection of Teclis, so important that if he didn't get it off, probably would have been game over straight away, right?
Yeah, I had a mate texting me going, oh, I would have gone for two at 12. And I was saying, well, you know, it's turn one, so inherently he hasn't had an opportunity to pop the asterism. I don't think, because that's start of the hero, not start of the battle round. So basically, Matt didn't want to risk getting diced by Croak, because if he rolls the double six, he's got an inherent plus one on his war scroll. So the only way that he wouldn't have got that protection off is if Croak rolls a double six. But there is an argument for him to go two at 12 and then get total eclipse off to get total eclipse off along with the protection, and then shut down that that CP engine, or just make it, because normally you put total eclipse on a normal army, like, I don't know, against Khorne, and okay, you have to spend two CP to pile in an attack again, and it's like, oh wow, I'm going to be able to do that once, you know, for the rest of the game. Or in a game I spent four CP auto passing battle shock and auto sixing a run. Whereas it did show that even when he got total eclipse off later in the game, it didn't really slow down Croak too much, did it? But I think early, if he'd have not rolled many four ups or five ups on his CP generation, it would have made Trogdor have much more decisions to make in terms of where he put his buffs, in terms of, you know, the plus one, because they love doing that plus one to hit onto both the salamanders and the skinks. So that would have cost him four rather than two. Yeah. I don't know. Might have been worth the gamble. I'm not sure what you think, Rob.
I'm more of a risky player. Depends on what rewards I would have been able to get out. I think that the universal debuff on the CP is really, really important, and two at 12 seems fine. But that said, like, I can completely understand Matt's choice, because the output that we saw, even with protection of Teclis up, even with that 5-up DPR around, with even in Sire, with being able to use those Aether Quartz to give plus saves, Matt's army crumpled under the output that came out of the Seraphon army. Now, it could be Trogdor rolled really well, but he got butchered. Like, it was absolutely wild. He took out 14 3-up save, 5-up DPR archers in one round of shooting from three salamanders, which is pretty significant. Like, it was just bonkers. And they were also minus one to hit because they were Shining Company. So, I think I agree with Darren in the chat. Lovely that Darren's here. Darren's doing a list diary show on Wednesday if everyone gets hyped for that. So everyone gets super excited for Wednesday. He said if you're up against it, like, because I talk about this a lot in the workbook. If you aren't the beatdown, i.e. if you aren't in the driving position, and pretty much whenever you're playing Seraphon, you aren't in the driving position, you might as well make the risky plays, because the safe defensive plays aren't really going to work out for you, because you're probably already going to lose. Like, numbers to numbers, Seraphon should beat you 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you got to go for the big plays, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think... Yeah, looking at what, you know, I just had did a couple of little notes, and there's a drawing of a frog at the same time, and I'm just calling him, you want to see him, look at him, the little gear.
I love that, like people are like, what's he saying to Sigmar about? It's like, yeah, there are guys that are raised from the dead, there are these kind of immortal souls that get recast all the time, and, you know, there's these warriors, like, for different Chaos Gods, rat skaver men, but most importantly, we're all terrified of frogs. Like, yeah, mortally terrified of frogs.
Imagine if it was like an otter or a gerbil, or like, oh yeah, it's like, oh, I've got this undead collection of warriors. They're arcane constructs generated by a lord of death, and you're like, wow, amazing, you must win all your games. It's like, nah, an undead frog on a chair just rinses me every fucking time. What? There's no frogs in Game of Thrones. Surely a heraldic warrior with a blade, you know, made from some special silver is going
to
come.
I would love to put, like, Croak and then the Khorne dragon on a table, yeah? And have, like, 100 people come in and be like, okay, everyone, which one of those two is most scary? And they'll be like, well, obviously the fucking dragon, mate. And I'm like, well, let me tell you. Yeah.
Let me introduce you to the world of Age of Sigmar at the moment. No, so I'm going to start calling him the incomparable Lord Croak. Because I don't think that we can compare him to much else in the game for that point. And I just wrote down what the list's got. It's got CP, It's got summoning. It has a fantastic spell lore. Magically dominant. It's got speed. It's got teleports. It's got synergy overload. And it's got guns. And I think, much like calling back to what Pete said earlier, Matt had a fair amount of the things that are needed to beat them. But I think to beat them, you need screens. You need your own guns, because you're just going to get... If you're trying to walk forward and fight them in melee, unless you're incredibly fast, it's very difficult. So you need screens, you need shooting output, you need incredible movement, and then you need resilience, which is hard to find all of that in one book, isn't it? You can't have it all.
You can't have it all. And normally books play to their strengths, right? Like, so with Iron Jaws or Biguar as an example, they generally play to their strengths, and that's that they can be very fast, they can dish out a lot of combat hurt. That's generally their strengths, which is good. They've got good ball control and a bunch of other stuff. Magic dominance isn't really their strength, whereas if you stick over to Osiarchs, Osiarchs' strengths obviously are the catapults and just how good Mortek Guard are, I would say. And the ability for people not really to fuck around with their CP. They've got they generally get quite a bit of CP. They get some options, but you know their army can kind of activate, which is quite interesting. With the Seraphon list and with all of the Seraphon lists, I think points, and a lot of people think points aren't going to be able to sort this out. But I do feel like if you had one less unit, two less units, with the points lifted up, then you would maybe see that come down a little bit, ultimately. You know, so the one of the units that we're seeing in this list here, obviously, is that unit of 15 chameleon skins. If you just didn't have room for that, that would change up the shape of the game quite a bit, you know. And also, we just need to talk about output. The army can put out hurt, hurt, big hurt. And those salamanders are incredible for their points. Even now, 110 points per salamander. They've got also a great war scroll that mechanically works quite different. Normally, like with, let's say, Vanguard Raptors with long strike crossbows, if I do two wounds to them, I take out some of their output. You know, I think one of the things you were talking about with the Alapexes for their Deepkin, the reason they're so good is that they've got like a monster wound profile. If you take two, you're talking at 16 wounds on a 4-up save. That's better than a Bloodthirster. Their output's better than a Bloodthirster. They're more survivable. They don't degrade. They're always going to be that fast. Their war scroll is inherently better points value than a Bloodthirster will ever be, even including the buffs you can put on a Bloodthirster. So, there's some just great, great overlapping war scroll abilities here, especially with those salamanders, where they effectively have 9 ablative... Is it 11 ablative wounds? It's 3 per handler, right? If you take a unit of 3, it's 11. Yeah. It's 11 wounds that you have to do to the unit before you actually take any of its damage efficiency out. That's a problem, I think, as well. But the output is outrageous.
What I would say, if you're interested in seeing how this works, I love taking a list apart, and I know there's a lot of people that you know very much like writing lists, sort of analyzing and deconstructing a list. I mean, once you take that apart and you see how everything works, it's the fact that everything's got the skink keyword, or there's so much skink keyword going on that you can just lay on so many buffs, so you're just effectively, there's a lot.
I don't mind that. I honestly don't mind that, because I think if the points changed, I think the ability for the army to debuff itself, because what you don't want to do is put it in a git situation where you've got an army that just doesn't coherently work with itself, which is super weird. Yeah, like, you know, but they're just pointed. These are pointed very aggressively, like they're very cheap. The git stuff is pointed a lot higher, and so I think if you just took some of that away, you gave them less stuff. I think that's a good start, and I think that some of these units also have got some pretty funny war scrolls. That 16-inch shot that we've been joking about with the skinks, although we've got teleporting bow snakes, 24-inch range with a teleport, so they're 9 away. That's pretty aggressive as well, Owen. Right? Like that's like very hard to manage.
Yes, I've played against that list a couple of times in the last week, and it's similarly, there is a level of oppression that you get from 20 Bloodstalkers who are shooting in the hero phase and then teleporting and shooting again, but I just think that they don't have a CP farm to keep funding that hero phase shot. they don't have summoning to then fill in the gaps of when your stuff dies. Because, yeah, you look at the War Scrolls and stuff, you know, it is all quite weak and fragile. But then you then look at, like, with Fangs of Sodek, it's weak and fragile, but you might not have the opportunity to hit it anyway, because if they've got the hero set up correctly, which I think Trogdor did make a mistake in the final where he had his 40 block out of range. He pushed them up to threaten, and then they were out of range to do the parting shot, because that's the big one with Fangs of Sotek, is that parting shot where you get to shoot, and obviously your unit's probably fully buffed. The unit that you offer up to potentially be charged is going to be fully buffed, so it'll do a bit, and then yeah, on the four up it moves away, and on turn one that's an 11 inch move. So yeah, the War Scrolls and the way that everything synergizes is great if it was just like Starborn, but then when you add in the extra elements that Fangs give it as well, it's really good. It's like my notes here just say it's too perfect. Like, there's just too much going on, and that's, you know, it's great the way that it all overlaps and you've got so many options, but there's just too, you can just too do too much. Normally when you go into any matchup you're like, oh god, well, he's going to counter this really well, or I'm not going to be able to get these guys to pay for their points during the game. Whereas, you know, the path to victory, we talked about it during the coverage, but Trogdor, he took out three Tzeentch armies to qualify, and then he beat another Seraphon, he beat the Biguar, and then the Lumineth. So there's quite a few different types of threats that he's had to deal with. And I know that obviously Lumineth in the finals, not to spoil it for anyone, it's still really interesting, but, you know, that's a mat one, turn three, and it was a turn three concession after winning. I know that in the round one in the mirror match, that was a turn three concession from his opponent. So it's like he's able to deal with a lot of different threats and wrap games up quite quickly with this if it's played well. I think that's the fear, isn't it? With Seraphon, in the hands of a good player, it's incredibly powerful, right?
Well, so let's talk about some comparisons for everyone in the world, because that's always a good place. And again, not ragging on the faction. If you love it, if you love all the dinos, that's brilliant. Let's just talk about it. I've been doing this for a long time now. Yeah, like I could talk about Daughters of Cain at the height of Daughters of Cain power. Benjamin Saville was winning event after an event after event. However, as much as Benjamin was smashing it, other people were also doing really, really well as well. Yeah, like and Benjamin has gone on to do like a bunch of other very successful stuff. I want to make sure that very clear. Like with factions that no one's even heard of, like Legion of Grief and some other stuff. The important point is, yeah, it's at that time there were also another bunch of people who were doing really well. Flesh Eater Courts came in. They smashed it. Win percentages 70% plus. And it wasn't just one person. It wasn't just one place. There was Australia. There was America. There was here. It was all over the place. Everyone was doing well with that faction. Everyone, all at the same time. Which means, which really does start to indicate there are great players in every country as well. That's super important. Every country has a whole cabal of really solid, really, really good players. And it's really fun when they get to meet up on international events like Blood Tithe and stuff like that, and they get to play each other. I find that stuff super exciting. And Six Nations, another great example. Sinesh, the same. And so now we're just in that same position. All of those armies, by the way, got points increases or rules changes because they were too effective in the game. Too effective does not mean we hate you. Too effective means let's analyze why, and then let's talk about that. And it's also something to think about when you go into competitive events. Can I be that very effective thing? How can I stop Sinesh? How can I stop Flesh Eater Courts? How can I stop Vanguard Wing? How can I stop Daughters of Cain? Were questions the competitive community have had to ask over the past several years. And now the next question is, how do you stop Seraphon? Seraphon feels like it's in this unique place where it has all of the tools, and it can sideline into Thunder Lizards, and it can sideline into Saurus builds and a bunch of different stuff. So it feels like it's a very strong army. And that's a real positive if you're a Seraphon player. If you're a Seraphon player, finger guns to the sky, boys. Yeah, you guys are going and smashing up events. That's great. Is it bad for the game? It is, because it lowers the skill cap of the game. It means the game isn't your skill isn't as relevant as the power of the army. Those are really important things. We generally like the skill to be something. I like to think that my decisions matter and my playstyle matters. And sometimes when an army is too good, it isn't. So that's fair enough, right? That's fair enough. So Seraphon, I expect to still do well in the future.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the book is so good. They could absorb some points changes. And we do want things to be good and people to have a good time with their toys and stuff. It's just you then have to think, okay, there's the argument around, oh, I've been playing the army for years and now it's really good, but people, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to play you. Well, there's a, you know, you have to think about the other side of it. You know, I've attended a hell of a lot of tournaments and been on TTS and been thoroughly disappointed and down on my army because it just got absolutely destroyed by Seraphon multiple times. So there is an argument to say you've got to think about the, you know, the enjoyment of the your opponents during the tournament as well. And that puts me in a tricky place as a TO, I'll be honest with you. Like, I do think that they are really operating on just that level above everybody else. That
I want to make it super clear what I did as well. Like, and I got Vince Ventrella called me the Warhammer terrorist for this suggestion, but I don't think it's unfair at all. I think anything that flies above the 60% win rate should outright not be allowed at tournaments. Like, you can call me you can say that, oh Rob, that's super unfair. It's not my fault that the rules aren't done well. Like, you have to give everyone a fighting chance. Like, that's how it works, right? If I put you all on an F1 racetrack and I gave one person an F1 car and everyone else a bicycle, you'd be like, this isn't very fair. You're a terrible tournament organizer. Now, I'm not asking for TOs to do that. It's what I would do. I think that's a sensible decision. Anything that goes above 60%, you cut out. Like, that makes sense to me because then you rein it in. You give them like a window to produce that 60% win rate and make sure it exists over time. But anyway, that's not what I'm calling for today. We're all in lockdown. No one's actually playing tournaments other than TTS stuff. It's great, a conversation for data. But I do feel like it's, honestly, Owen, that I felt like that for a long time. When I saw it with Sinesh, when I saw it with Flesh Eater Courts, I just always felt like that. I was just like, why would you, like, as a tournament organizer, your job is to make people have a good time. Like someone's like, I've worked in whatever job I've done Monday through to Friday. I'm here to play with my toys and have a great time. And you're like, well, you're gonna have a shitty time versus all these people. And I don't know. It's but that, like,
I've got an idea, and because there are this, you know, Borny 86 says, you know, this is the same discussion that was had with Iron Hands in seventh. And I do remember, not that I play 40k, I do remember a lot of people talking about how incredibly powerful Iron Hands were. My, like, on the fly, like, my idea would be, I don't want to ban a faction. I just think perhaps maybe for the next Hammer Time, just as a little thought exercise. And other, because all it does is when you ban one thing, it makes other stuff good, and that's obviously a very sort of, you know, that's a conversation that's been had before. But how about we just have a little look, and maybe we'll ban Starborn?
Okay, interesting.
What do you think? Just Cottle's ban Claw. Starborn? Yeah, just Cottle's Claw and Thunder Lizards. I think that because I do know that the people who love the faction and want to do well with it and not take the obnoxious build, they tend to be Cult's Claw or Thunder Lizard players. Because I just don't like the word ban, and I don't like people to not have a good time.
Hey, listen, I knew how the community would respond to that, so I created a very intricate series of ban-style shows where people could do some fun stuff just to skip it, to make list diversity, because you understand how I feel. Like, I'm being super conscious of time, we've got loads to go on with. Understand how I feel when I go to tournaments, and as an example, when we went to CanCon this year, I was like, hey, by the way, Zeench are going to win this. Six games later, loads of coverage later, hundreds of games, guess which army walked out of it. Going into that event with a predetermined winner is a rough time. That doesn't take anything away from Jimmy the Hand. What an excellent player and what a great list. Right, so moving on from the conversation about Seraphon and doing really well. Butcher's Tribe, Owen. Butcher's Tribe.
Yes.
Tell me about this.
Can I just do one little thing? If anyone's got any ideas about how to handle that issue and not deal with banning, I don't like the idea of banning per se. But yeah, if anybody would like to, if they join my Discord and there's a tournament ideas, we can all have a nice big conversation in there, and let's see if we can figure something out. But yes, let's go. Butcher's Tribe. Woohoo! This is fun. We've been covering this for the last few weeks. It's been going on since the start of the year, and we're just at the stage now where the 28 initial teams that were all in pools have now been brought down to 8 teams. So the top team from each of 7 pools came through, along with a highest second place for the wild card. Mm-hmm. So I just thought we'd put a pin in that. And have a chat. So Yeah, we can
see. I mean, straight away, if you guys can look at here, I see a great, great rematch. Top of the pile, Fiction playing Bad Moon Loons, which is a Super Series match waiting to happen in real life at any point. Owen, I know you said this. With Team Bin going through as first place losers, wild card.
Potentially. We've got Team Bin and Team Boff down there in the wild card slot. Effectively, Boff got a 20-0 last night. They're currently in the slot, but there's one game left in Team Bin's pool, which means that if they get an 18-2, they will go through as the wild card. So, there's still that last position at the bottom of the graphic that you can see is still up for grabs. But yes, I would probably put my money on Bin getting the 18-2 that they need and then them being in that slot. So it's all set up for Fiction. We're going to win and we're going to just rematch against
Into the final.
I mean, there's obviously loads of amazing teams there, but Fiction, so that's Benjamin and Laurie and I against the Bad Moon Loons. So Matthew, who you saw on the stream, he's playing Eidneth along with Daniil, and then there's a Gristle Gore, like a Speckle special with that Bad Moon Loons team. Yeah, it's the five dragon smashy bashy, let's go twice. Yeah, your favorite kind of list, Rob, like literally what you play the game.
The list I give to 8-year olds. Is the list I do. Yeah. Right. Throw it forward. just FYI, love Speckles forever.
This is the quarterfinals and we're into knockout. So much like the weekend. So then you've got the new European Alliance. If I'm not mistaken, that's Tavi, who's in the chat, his team, along with AZ and also Konstantin. So these guys are all just players, I believe, that have met through the wonder of TTS and put a team together. So that's really cool. They're facing off against the terrors of international Warhammer, the Angry Alpacas. So yeah, they've got the Russian team there,
that's going to be a great match. Excited to see how that plays out.
And then Team SYM, that's Steve Follows' team along with Lewis and Dave, and they're facing off against an all-American team in the Seraphonies. That's Kyle and Bamdad and Basil, I believe. And then Huchi Hastley, which I've looked into, it means kitchen cupboard in Swiss German. I don't know. I'll have to have a chat with them and figure out why they're named as they are. they're facing, probably Team Bin. Team Boff is the Danish guys. So that's Sven and Kasper. That's a great little team. And they were just drawn in a particularly difficult group. Team Boff, I believe they were in with, I want to say, perhaps the new European Alliance. I'm not sure. But anyway, Bin and Boff. But I expect Bin, which is Luke Morton, Dan Bradshaw, the current UK master, and also Simon Hall of Aussie TOing and playing fame. There's a lot of Seraphon in there, to no one's surprise after what we've just been talking about. Fair amount of Zeech, lots of Ossiarch Bone Reapers.
Ogre's doing really well as well. Ogre's in two of the armies at least, which I think is super interesting. I love that Legion of Grief list in the Angry Alpacas. That's quite out there. You rarely see that. But it's going to be interesting. You've even got Seraphon in your army, Owen, in your team.
We have. Laurie is running the Seraphon. We've got a few different picks to this. We've got a Skink Oracle on Troglodon, which you don't see very often. It's very much we're playing Fangs because it's really good. Benjamin's playing Host Duplicitous with 40 pinks in a change host. And then I'm playing Petrifex OBR. Yeah, so the nature of the format meant that you had to have one army from each Grand Alliance at maximum. So that's why you are seeing more Bone Reapers and Flesh Eaters and Ogres and Legion of Grief than you would see probably in a normal... I thought you were better than that, Owen. Yeah, so did I. But, you know, the will to win sometimes trumps. I wouldn't do it in singles, but, you know...
You can't not do it. It's like, as the first defender as well, it's so funny. It's like, hey, so look at me, first defender, who are you putting in? This basically unbeatable army, your turn. And you're like, oh, fuck. Like, who do you put in as attacker against a Seraphon first defender? Like, what's the plan? I won't ask you what your tactics are. Huh?
No, Jack Summers is saying, I assume Catacross with your Petrifex army. No, I'm running 90 Mortec Guard, a Liege Cavalos, double Bone Shaper, double Crawler it's fun. Well, it's fun for me to play anyway. So that's going to start now. We've just got a couple of loose ends to tie up, and then we're going to be into that quarterfinal knockout. So maybe PASC can give us a proper update. But now we've got less teams to cover. Hopefully we'll be able to drill into a little bit more of the detail on that. So it should be really exciting. Lots of good players. Everyone's obviously, everybody that's won through won all of their rounds. So they won through, obviously, against all the other teams in their group. So everyone's there on merit. There's no bunny runs there at all. It's all through hard graft. So, yeah, be really interesting.
They've
all
worked and got to the place that they're at now. Absolutely. So that's still kicking off. Well done to PASC for running that. Lovely fella. There are also some upcoming events that we've got coming, on TTS and in real life, Owen.
Yes, there are a couple of real life events over in Australia. Let me see my notes. It's the Vic GT and the South Australian GT run by Doom and Darkness. That's over the weekend. I believe it's the 13th and 14th of March. I've got about a million screens open. I don't have that one in front of me, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that's coming up. But let me just check that for you now. Here are my notes. So that'll be both 2-day, at least I'd imagine probably 50 player events. Yeah, here we go. Thanks, Chris, in the chat. They're saying, 13th, 14th. So Mother's Day on the 14th, I believe. So obviously going and playing Warhammer with your pals is... I suppose you could send a card. Send a card.
Bring her along.
And then go to the...
Bring her along. I think that's the answer.
Yes! Mum Hammer. That would be good, wouldn't it? On the Sunday. Mother's Day.
It's like, come on, Mum. Let's go.
Hold on. So you're telling me that giant Lord of the Undeath, he's just been killed by that little frog? This isn't right.
What's going on here?
I don't know why both of our mothers are from the East End of London, but we had a fun time going on that bit.
I wish Peggy Mitchell had been my mum. I'll tell you that for nothing. Get it!
It's on the 30th and 14th, but then you've got some exciting coverage to announce, haven't you, Rob? Woohoo!
I'm just absolutely impressed by intern Matt's gag in the chat. He smashed it. That's a great joke. Reference, bit of an in joke, but that relates to me having sex with a mum at one point. So great job there, Matt. Loved it. I just want to let everyone in the chat. You smashed it there, Matt. Great gag. So the Battle of Copenhagen on the 6th or 7th of March is a 2-day TTS AOS singles tournament, and you're playing. Sava's playing, Orkman's playing, my man Iron Gutsman's playing. Love that guy. Yeah, some big names. I think it's Tavi Game playing. Some big names. Philip Kartiev, a bunch of other stuff. They're all playing at this event. We're going to be doing the coverage for it, so looking forward to that. So that's the 6th and 7th of March, so book the weekend off. Get yourself some beers in, some other illicit materials, whatever you want. Some cupcakes, not for me, because I'm fat. But, some get yourself in. And we're going to do a weekend of coverage, and we'll have a great time covering some TTS games. Just letting you know, probably Seraphon will win, isn't it? And then you got the SAGT and the VicGT. So some upcoming events, which is super fun. So we'll do some coverage, and we've got some information for stats, right? So March starting to ramp up, and we're going to see more and more events as time goes on. And, it looks like in the UK, May time, we might start having some actual real-life events, maybe. And then I think there's some, other events, other places around the world. Give it 6 months, Owen. This little section of upcoming events might be thick and fast.
Yeah, we might have to do a two-hour show, Rob? Well, not like a two-hour show that we sometimes do inadvertently, but like a proper two-hour show where we've got to talk about, loads. Yeah,
there's a one-day team tournament in Perth as well on March the 20th. Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much. Reach out to us and let us know about that. That would be super cool. Thank you. I'd love to hear about that. Lovely. I mean, let's get out of here. We've done a great show, and it's time to leave, is what I'm going to say. And I'm super happy. You got any shout-outs before you want to head out?
I'll shout out my cousin Adam, Adam Jackson. He's going to try and motivate me. He's a wonderful hobbyist, and he's going to try and motivate me to get some painting done. So we're setting some goals. So I'm going to paint this Mortars and Soul Reaper this week. Ooh. So yeah, we're going to have a little hobby chat every Sunday, you know, set some goals, get some stuff painted. So yeah, shout out to Adam. Thanks, cuz. Yeah, looking forward to getting those bits done. And shouts to the chat. Had a nice bunch of peeps in the chat again today. So thanks for their company. Make my Monday very enjoyable. So yeah,
I'm going to shout out the chat also, as always. Do join us again tonight for the Age of Sigmar show, where I get to tell Nathan about Sinestra, which is going to be super fun. Looking forward to that. See what everyone's thoughts are. Also, shout out to Matt, James, and also Adam for helping with the coverage of the weekend. Owen, obviously, as well. You're all brilliant people. Thanks for tuning in. Join me again later. Looking forward to it. We're still on that path to partner, so as many people as can jump onto the Twitch chat as possible. Keep those numbers high. It would be great. Loads and loads of love. Look after yourselves, and we'll have a great day.